I was just referring to, I was about to ask a question about, just again, thinking about other cases, and there's been questioning about the board not identifying the crime. Now, obviously, the legislature could require the board to specifically identify a crime, but just to be clear for purposes of this case and future cases, is the board obliged to identify the crime that it concludes that there's a substantial likelihood of occurring?
There's nothing of that in the statute or the regulations, Your Honor, and it would be our position, no. Again, they can't have a crystal ball. What they have to do is make their assessment based on their expertise of whether there's a substantial likelihood of a future crime occurring, and they have to set forth their reasons therefore, and they did that here, Your Honors. They noted that Mr. Akoli's, strategic, they use the term internal and external, but let's think of it more as a strategic view of violence, that if placed in a charged situation in the future, because right now he was identifying just the change in society, right, that the election of President Obama showed him that the world could change. That is an external factor. It's a strategic view that if society changes back or something else happens, that violence would be justified. And that is, they took that into consideration and realized that they made their decision based on their expertise, Your Honor. And this court's, as standard.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I was just going to say, as standard judicial practice when reviewing administrative agencies, deference is afforded to them, especially in connection with decisions where they are the experts here.
You concede that at the end of this almost six-hour interview or questioning, and after Akoli had said repeatedly, I don't know what happened because I was out as a result of this grazing bullet, he was asked to conjecture by the board. They told him, don't tell us what you know. Tell us now what you think. Do you agree with that?
No, they certainly pushed him, and they asked him to say what he thought, but they didn't put words in his mouth. And I think, Justice Bena, that goes to your point. They didn't tell him what to say. What did he say? He said, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No.
He said that I think it was friendly fire.
That's when he was asked to conjecture. I'm looking at the transcript.
Yes, Your Honor.
Because they told him, don't tell us what you know.
Yeah.
This is Mr. Jefferson. I didn't ask you to know. I asked you, who do you think?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, the reason why I'm making this point is because the board and the appellate division below said he changed his story. But he didn't change his account in terms of what he knew. When he was told to conjecture, he gave conjecture, correct?
No, Your Honor. So I would say he was pushed and he was asked to speculate. But what's interesting, the insight it gives into his position. And with respect to when he was asked, he immediately reverted to not that it was Joanne Chesimard or somebody else or could have happened. It was friendly fire. And that shows two things, Your Honor. One, that despite him saying he's accepted responsibility and he understands when pushed on what happened, he goes to blaming the victims here, the officers. And more so, it is a change in his story. Because for him to say friendly fire while I was struggling, because I think it's later in the record, there's various places in the record that they push him on it, Your Honor. And hang on one second, because I think I wrote that down. That I think the transcript's at 270 to 272. When they push him on it, he says it was friendly fire while there was a struggle going on. Well, while there's a struggle going on means he was awake for it, not asleep. And that's where the board took exception and said, you've likely changed your story. Or even if he hadn't necessarily changed his story, it provides insight into his thinking and his credibility with respect to saying that there was.
This is, again, I have the transcript. So I want to ask you, who do you think killed Trooper Forster? Not who did it. They didn't want him. They knew he was continually saying that he was out when this occurred. And then they were asking him to conjecture.
So,
and maybe his conjecture was crazy, but that's what it was. It was conjecture.
It was conjecture, Your Honor, but it shows insight into his thinking, and that is where the, what the parole board then cited back as reasons.
Does it not?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Shows a certain mindset, does it not?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you have anything?
I have lots I would like to say, Your Honor, but I think I will sum up here that with respect to, as the majority opinion found, there was enough evidence in the record under the preponderance of the evidence. And again, I've cited, it wasn't a crime of youthful indiscretion. He was like in his late 30s and 40s. They cited his strategic view of violence, and he hasn't changed that. Despite taking several classes and even teaching them on criminal thinking, which I know I didn't get into a lot, he couldn't articulate what he's learned. And I would just like to cite that reference to the criminal thinking, the board member was asking him at the time about the class that he was supposed to be taking when he was in New York. And that was where the judge said, or that's where the board member said, you know, you're supposed to have taken this class. And he said, oh, well, I guess I didn't show up for it. You know, but I remember taking it somewhere. And the board member then said, well, tell us what you've learned. And I know Mr. Afrin says, well, he took that class 50 years ago, but he also taught classes. And he could have articulated, apparently, what he's learned, and
well,
he didn't.
So however many years earlier, he said, I learned that you should step away from violence, that you shouldn't commit unlawful acts. That's what he said. That's what he learned from the course. Is that a bad thing to learn from the course?
That doesn't really show. Like, just, I think, Your Honor, where the board is saying is he's just said, I've just learned that. But just saying that without, and they asked him for deeper insight in specific instances, and he didn't articulate
specific
instances.
That would be like asking someone who went to college 10 years ago, like, what did you learn in your English literature class?
Yes, Your Honor. So I guess just one last thing I would like to note is that we're up, as I've mentioned at the beginning, we're on an appeal as of right. And so the question before this court really relates to, in this particular instance, whether it's arbitrary and capricious. And that's where the court should focus here. I know that some of the amicus raise issues that are greater and beyond the scope of that. For example, the ACLU and the public defenders talk about, like, basically that everybody's had the standard wrong for so long and there shouldn't be, you know, deference afforded, it's supposed to be more objective in nature, and they were raising questions far beyond this case. And to the extent that this court is, you know, considering those changes, I would ask that the public, that the parole board be allowed to brief those issues.
Thank you. Do any members of the board have any questions? Thank you very much for your remarks. You've asked for 3 minutes.
I will be brief. Thank you, Your Honor. And thank you for the break. What comes out of the state's argument is still there is no substantiated reason to deny parole. No idea what kind of crime he's going to commit. No idea, no ability to point to a given fact that really shows a likelihood of crime. I understand that answer on friendly fire, which was extracted after hours of questioning, could show a certain mindset. He may be a little stubborn, perhaps, after all these decades and can't quite admit it was Ms. Chesimard who did it. I don't know why. But that's human nature. Sometimes people can't quite face something. But he has always said he didn't do it. This answer doesn't change that. And he was pressed over and over to come up with an explanation. He's an elderly man at that point. He was sitting for hours. And the question was fundamentally unjust. He had already said a dozen times, I don't know. It should have been left at that. Not to push and push and push, as counsel admits they were doing, to try to extract something we can say, gotcha, now we can deny parole for different reasons than 4 years ago. That's what happened here. It was a fundamentally unfair approach. And in any event, it doesn't mean he's going to commit future crime. The prosecutor also said he may not have done it. If he didn't do it, there are only two other possibilities, an accidental friendly fire or Ms. Chesimard. Either way, it confirms what he has always said. He didn't do it. It's not really a change. It's not a fair basis for denial of parole. With respect to the psychological reports, nothing has been identified by the state in its argument or in its brief that would indicate a likelihood of future crime. He says, I don't advocate any longer, Justice Albin, you quoted him very much at length. I don't advocate violence. He has an explanation that's quite lengthy. But what we should look at is those 40 years in which he has practiced no violence. Not a single scuffle with a guard or a fellow prisoner, nothing. This man has lived in a way that shows those words. He had a horrible crime he committed. But he's gotten beyond that, and for purposes of parole, that's what needs to be shown. What more can this man do at 85 years of age to prove his fitness? One thing he said, which I think is very striking, in his own words, he wasn't led to this question. He said, I also understand that my children still had me as a father, though I was in jail, but Trooper Foster's son lost his father completely. No one prompted him to say that. That's insight. That's why Dr. Gorwitz said years of mental health counseling have brought him to a point of better understanding, of true understanding. We can't ask for more than that. This man has no more road left, and he's done everything humanly possible to show he's fit for parole. To deny him parole at this stage would be a gross injustice. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Afrin, and thank you for the presentation of all counsel.